Extreme, excellent, exclusive, extraordinary, exciting, ecstatic, X-rated, explosive, excessive, in excess, X!
Let's talk about the overall sound of X. You listen to X, just even just one time through, overall, it sounds musically warmer, fatter, and the strongest melodies you've ever written on one all in one album.
Oh, good.
Well, thanks. Great. Thank you. I mean, we're I think we're really happy with the record.
Yeah.
But how about this? Let's talk about just the overall sonics. It sounds earthier. It sounds less pristine.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot.
How did you do that?
I agree.
And why did you?
I think.
How did you?
No, I think on the last album we actually had a rougher album, but when we mixed it, we were maybe we cut away a little bit too much. And on this album, we've let it go a bit. You can hear a bit more of the room and coffee cups falling over and whatever. It's that kind of feel, which we love. You know, that's our favorite albums. Really, our albums like that. You know.
Was it an adjustment? You sat down with the band and with Chris and said...
No.
It just kind of evolved that way?
Well, yeah. I mean, also, I think it really evolved because we maybe had a year of time to ourselves after the Kick tour. Mm. And we didn't, you know, we didn't really have any hesitations about wanting to make another record. And because of that, I think it has a certain freshness about it, too. There's a certain immediacy about making this record. And it comes out in the record. You know, it's been a while since the band's been together. I think it's an important record, actually, for NXS as well. I think, yeah.
I think it'd be interesting to talk about that a year from now. Yeah. I think you're really... I mean, you're right. I'm surprised you can see it because you're so close to it. Mm-hmm. This is a significant album. This is going to be a very, very important album. And that's another thing that doesn't happen these days. People don't follow up, you know, when they make a 6 or 7 million seller, if they do ever in your wildest dreams and career, they rarely come back with something even better. It just doesn't seem to happen in this day and age. They either rush to it, you know, there's pressure to get another one out, or they shot their wad. The creative well all went dry. Obviously, no such problems with this band.
We don't know.
I'm telling you.
I'll tell you what, we didn't take this time off to make the album. We haven't been in a studio biting our nails for 3 years or something. We did the album actually in less time than we did Kick.
Really?
But yeah, and we just, you know, by a week or something. But, you know, we really just tried to forget it all, go in, be a band, enjoy ourselves, do the songs. Okay.
How did you get... how many bands can get away with not changing key in 4 minutes and some odd seconds? Do you realize that after you did the song, after Suicide Blonde?
Oh, that song. Yeah. Well, it was my idea. I thought, how can I do this? Because I know that the best dance songs you listen to don't change key when you're dancing. You know, they very rarely change key. You know,
it's just a groove.
Yeah, it's a groove.
I guess.
But the trick is, I thought, how can I do this without actually leaving the root note? And I thought, change from minor to major within a song. And the producer, Chris Thomas, said to me, hey, Andrew, you know, you can't do this. You can't, you know, you're crossing your majors and minors. And I had to look at him and say, do you think, you know, I'm an idiot? I know what's going on here. I did this on purpose. The chorus is in the minor. You know, you want da-da-da-da. And the actual verse sections are in majors, you know. That's what you're hearing. Wow. So that never actually changes. It does change key, but it doesn't change root notes. So you've got this shifting thing going on all the time. It's very subtle, but it's hanging in there, you know.
And it really, really works.
It did work, yeah. And the combination of the course of the group playing the things worked too. I mean, that's mainly what it is, yeah.
But it's not. Chris is right. It's definitely the exception.
Yeah, because it's something, you know. Technically, he's absolutely right. It's something I probably shouldn't really do. But then, you know, who writes these rules?
Oh, right. Who right? No, you're absolutely right. Suicide Blonde probably could have gone on indefinitely, never change key, and you never lose a groove. That's a pretty cooking band. Very few bands can have. James Brown's Flames could do that, you know.
No, oh, James
forever,
Brown,
right?
He's,
right.
Yeah.
But how many? I mean, you know, how many bands since then could get into a groove and milk it and take it all away, and people not notice, not care?
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, the people, funnily enough, the people who can do that, a lot of the people that can do that are a lot of the rap artists at the moment who can just stay on a groove and how clever they are with is it phonetics? I don't know if that's the right term. I shouldn't use these words anyway, I suppose. But they have the right phrasing to be able to sustain a song. So you can listen to a song 10 minutes and it's been rapping and you're going, yeah, you're grooving to it because you're dancing and you're getting into what the message is or whatever.
About Disappear. Mm-hmm. You two wrote that? Did you? Disappear.
I think John and I wrote it, did he? Disappear is pretty... Actually, it's sort of a... goes back to our Motown roots or influences in a way. I suppose it has an on-beat kind of chorus. It's almost like a go-go song from the 60s in the chorus. It's all kind of psychedelic and way out or something. But the song is literally about someone, you know, falling in love and that person... It's incredible how that chemical that gets pumped through your body makes everything disappear in a way, you know, and it does, in one sense, it makes lot of troubles go away. In the other sense, it heightens them, makes you understand things and changes your perspective on the world for the good.
Did you get from detractors over the hit song "Devil Inside"? Did you get any mail?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, it's really a pretty straightforward statement. It's quite a Christian statement, actually. There is a devil inside. Even it's in the Bible. There is a devil inside that we all do tend to wrestle with here and there. You know,
but really, you didn't get any. You didn't get any mail or anything on that song. Because, see, we got some calls.
Did you?
We sure did.
Yeah, well, I suppose you would. I don't know. It's funny because I find America a pretty fundamental place. And so they're always going about fundamentalists, but it's really getting a bit fundamental here, my friends.
Yes. Yes.
A bit funny, you know?
Right. So, anyway. In the wake of all of this that we've talked about, censorship, the two live crew thing, you alluded to. Mm-hmm. This exhaustive and very costly Judas Priest trial
oh,
that
yeah,
just
yeah.
that just wound up, by the way, with an acquittal for the band and the record company. Mm. Of course, the trial was based over really culpability in lyrics. Mm. Did anybody, anywhere, management, record company, in the band, anywhere, have any reservations or mention anything about the first single, Suicide Blonde?
Yes.
What was said?
We did. Everybody did. I don't know.
Well, to be perfectly honest, and not just because I'm trying to shift the scope of things here, but I came up with a piece of music, and I knew as soon as I finished, I was really excited about it because, you know, I liked what I was doing. And then when Mark got together, maybe I think he did too, and I got these lyrics and he put them to it, and I must confess, I didn't actually sort of think too carefully about the you know, all this, you know, censorship controversy. I just think that the song sounded good, and you know, you can worry about censorship and everything, but the song is about someone, you know, dyeing her hair. I mean, it's, you know, it's literally what it's about.
So where's the term come from?
It's not about jumping off cliffs.
No, see, that's the whole thing. You know, it's almost as we what we call in Australia a piss take on the whole question of well, the song comes from. I'm maybe a 40s, 50s saying called it's when women would dye their hair in their own sink, and it's called Dyed by Their Own Hands, and the color was called Suicide Blonde.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah, you get it. Now, it's not a serious
Yeah,
it's
Dyed by Their Own Hands.
No,
right?
No, I know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm telling you, people.
Yeah, so.
Trying to get it out.
Take it. Yeah, okay. Right.
Exactly. So. Yeah. So
I'm telling you, I got to answer the telephone calls.
Sure, no, I
okay.
Look, you know, and it's better to get it out now to America and
exactly.
Say, hey, look,
Devil
Inside was no problem, and so we're not trying to be controversial by coming out with a song called Suicide Blonde because it's a phrase, right?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. You know, it's funny. People really get so literal, and they, in a way, it's a little cheeky, of course. And I don't, you know, I'm not trying to play with people, but you know, Suicide Blonde is the color of hair, and it's really a song about, you know, this woman dyeing her hair and taking on this role, and whether you know, and people think she's vulnerable, or is she vulnerable, and or anybody taking on something, you know, it's camouflage. We all use camouflages in certain ways, and it's about that. It's a story, you know, and it's certainly not about someone killing themselves. And do not do this at home, kids. You know,
and we put the song together before this controversy happened, so we're not trying to take advantage of an unfortunate situation.
Advantage.
We should point that out. You know,
what does rock and roll mean? And we all know what the slang came from. We've been saying rock and roll for years and years. You know, innuendo is the backbone of rock and roll. And suddenly, if some people start coming out and being a little bit more obvious about it, which they do lack imagination, if you ask me. I love innuendo. I think it's much more fun, you know. But just because some people are starting to come out and tell it like it is, everybody's going, whoa. It's a little cuts a bit fine to the bone. And it's going to upset some sensibilities. But rock and roll's always upset people's sensibilities. You were not allowed to watch Elvis's pelvis once upon a time.
That's right.
And a lot of people got scared of his pelvis, for God's sake. I mean.
And then he sang spirituals and he was okay.
And he was okay, you know. And I'm not interested in upsetting lots of people, and I don't think the band is, you know.
No, actually,
I'm not interested in curtailing my creativity either. I'm not going to ever do that. Somebody did say, I don't know who it was, let's change the lyrics to the song, to Suicide Blonde, and I would rather not have recorded it, you know.
I like to point out to people that In Excess is, you know, we're family people ourselves. We have kids and, you know, wives and that sort of thing, and we obviously understand that you have to be responsible for what your kids hear and what goes on and all the rest of it. But by the same token, there's also the other side to it. The irony is that, you know, a lot of the things like Roald Dahl, the writer, you know, he writes some of the most horrific stories you could ever imagine, and they're all kids' stories written for kids, and you know, and they're written with a sort of lighthearted, you know, attitude. I think
and
I'd
also
like
lessons
to
be learned.
Yeah, that's right, and a lot of the nursery rhymes, you know, Grimm's fairy tales and these things, Little Red Riding Hood. I mean, there's a vicious story for you. I mean,
They were, too. Yeah, they were scary when we were kids. I remember that.
So, you know, I mean...
But nobody went after them, did they?
Yeah, I mean, you know, but I should point out again that you know, this is just one record of the bands, and it's, you know, it's a lighthearted thing. It's not meant to be a serious song. Mm.
Okay. Yeah, people don't get confused with words, people. People should try and... Not jump at things and balk at things and be dramatic, you know. Read into it. Use your mind a little bit. Read into it. Understand things a bit more before people jump on people and start blaming and pointing fingers, you know.
Yeah. In Excess also has a lot of songs about improving your life as a person. We're very idealistic, too. We like to think that things are going to get better and everyone's going to try to make things better. I should point that out.
In fact, Suicide Blonde is about the sad fact that people, society... pushes sometimes inevitable outcomes onto people, you know, and it's saying don't do that, don't put people in boxes, you know lyrics go, you want to make her Suicide Blonde, you know, and that's what happens, you know. It's like the Marilyn Monroe thing where society, you know, you know, just drove her insane because they kept on pushing stuff on her she wasn't, you know. And it's saying, you know, leave people alone a bit, let them grow, let them be a bit.
Okay, it's a topical issue. There's lots of other songs on the record. There's another song called The Stairs, which is great because it deals with, Mark wrote lyrics again to that one. I'm a big fan of that song. It deals with people, you know, passing each other, you know, literally every day on the stairs to go to and from their lives, and they might never talk to each other. Mm-hmm. And they live in the same apartment building all their lives or whatever, and they just, you know.
So we've had big walls go down, big symbolic walls go down all over, you know, in the world recently, and we've all got them around us anyway, you know, and it's saying try and break this down a bit, you know.
Above a busy street, the echo
I'm Michael Hutchins. Remember, X marks the spot on your musical treasure map.
You mentioned earlier, Andrew, about getting some earthier sounds on this album. It seems that Tim has brought something out on the X album at times. I assume it's Tim. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that we haven't heard for several albums, and it's there's this twangy guitar on Who Pays the Price and on Suicide Blonde. How do you think things like that and harmonica? And that how does that affect the overall feel of the album? We haven't heard that on an NXS album, really.
We really sort of, I guess, went to town on that, I suppose. You know, and not so much on the guitar thing, because we've always done that. But on the harmonica thing, we had some fun with that. Actually, we were lucky. I mean, I'd been fooling around with some harp stuff. And I think the guys were talking about the fact that we needed someone, and a guy called Charlie Musselwhite was touring in Sydney, in Australia, just when we were recording. And we got Charlie to play, and the moment he started playing, I said, the harp fell out of my hands onto the floor. And Charlie's a great player.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah, he's pretty well-known.
That's how he ended up doing it, and that just worked out well.
You know, I was thinking, as even before I even listened to the music on X, about the groups that were born in kind of that post-punk, if you will, musical period in which NXS was born, very late 70s, and bands that, that, shall we say, came into international prominence in the early 80s. Off the top of my head, The Police, Men at Work. There's really quite a lengthy list. Regardless of their success, their relative success, and some of those had tremendous success, they didn't survive. They're no longer with us. And NXS not only survived that period, that whole decade of the 80s, but you've thrived through the 80s. You're one of the few bands that formed then and are at a peak. Why do you think that is?
I don't think we really have the faintest clue, to be honest. You know, we obviously try to keep things together, but it's just the chemistry maybe is right.
Also, I don't think we really hit our stride for quite a few years. I mean, a lot of those bands, there are some great bands that were formed then, but they were formed in a very passionate way. Like, they were formed out of punk, and they were put together with probably some pretty lofty ideals and ideas, and they burn out really quickly because they were very much, they're very timely and they were great, but they kind of exhausted their own possibilities probably pretty fast, you know. And we were still dithering about trying to find a style when they were like peaking. And then a lot of those bands were, even though they're from our generation, were influencing us. We certainly weren't influencing them. They were definitely influencing us, you know. And we've taken a while to really form a style up for ourselves. I think we're just getting into it now.
And also, we really didn't have, unlike say Man at Work, who you mentioned previously, they went from being supporting us when we were doing pubs in Australia to next minute they're on your syndicated television programs. And I remember watching them thinking, what the hell is this? And in a way, I felt really happy for them. I felt really sad for them, because it's a lot of pressure to come out of nowhere, or else we've, you know, maybe been lucky in a way to have built things slowly, because it's all been a gradual step, and we can each understand a little bit more about what we're actually doing, and, you know, and still keep enjoying it instead of just becoming this overnight sensation, I don't know if you'd like to put it that way.
Okay, I understand exactly what you're saying. It's very interesting. However, when I talk to bands that were formed 10 years earlier than NXS, bands that were formed in the late 60s and early 70s, the record industry would not have allowed them to build album after album to finally hit their stride, build an audience, and have a successful, if you will, for lack of a better term, career. Why then, if you were allowed to search for a style, build on a style, hone your craft, why are you the exception? Record companies haven't allowed that to happen for 15 or 20 years.
I think mainly because we have approached this from the very beginning like a band that we wouldn't let anybody sign us unless they understood us, and they understood that they weren't signing somebody they were going to make into anything. They weren't signing a solo act, which you can play with it like rubber, and that's how people did sign us, and I respect them for that, you know. And it has been probably a long haul for them, sitting around going, waiting, you know, and I respect them for that. But I suppose a lot of bands did get... I've really... It's funny, we hear of a lot of internal struggles that go on between in all these areas, and they sound like horror stories, but... I don't know, it's true, you know, there's a saying that, you know, Jimi Hendrix would never be signed today. Maybe in a few years they will, because everything went from the control of, you know, the record companies came in on something that was suddenly enormous. It was a, you know, society changed.
The party already started.
Yeah. And they came in and they went, who's happening? So it was created without anybody having to do with anything. It was just a natural phenomenon. And once they got in, they thought, well, we could do this ourselves. You know, we will create our own, extravaganzas, yeah. You know. And that's when things get a little bit funny. So I think it's coming around full circle to a point.
I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, I'm no expert in this field. I mean, there's a lot of things to do with human endeavor that are absolutely mystery to everyone in life. But, I mean, we're not perhaps the only people. Interestingly enough, there's other groups, you know, that have been around since the beginning of the 80s, such as U2.
Cure.
Such as the B-52s, the Cure. I mean, there's a lot of acts around, you know. And, but the interesting thing is there's not that many bands, and I don't know what it is, really. It takes a certain, you know, respect and commitment to be in a band. Otherwise, you just, you know, you're going to fragment. And that's it, you know. I don't know. I don't have an answer, really. I don't really know why, in a way. I'm not really sure.
I was talking with Sting at the really the height of the popularity of the Police, you know, in 83. And there were some rumbles and rumors about, you know, the band coming apart. And I was shocked. It was like, you know, you're one of the biggest bands in the world. You can't be selling more. You couldn't sell more records or more concert tickets. Why would the band be coming apart from the inside out? And and we tried to talk, you know, about the longevity or the lack of it for bands that seem to be formed in this period. You mentioned a couple of exceptions, and you're right, and you're one of them, thankfully. But he said he felt that it had something to do with accelerated times, maybe accelerated media. Why most bands from, let's say, in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, were allowed to do this. And like in 1980...
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah. that's true. I mean, I think our time reference has changed. And a year these days is equivalent to a lot longer time. You know, a decade now, it covers a lot of territory. I mean, a real lot of territory. A decade used to be like this enormous, expanse of time. We go through a lot in a couple of years now. And the same with bands. Same with, for everyone, people, you know, we have to deal with a lot quickly. And that's what, I don't know, we've never really questioned. I guess, I mean, almost, it sounds corny, but we really have never really questioned the fact that we're together. People tell us, gee, you've been together for a long time, aren't you lucky? And we go, oh, yeah. We are, but we never really quit.
But it's not really something that you dwell on.
Okay. Well, I mean, without sounding naive and ridiculous, it's a good job. It pays well. It's exciting. You meet interesting people. I mean, it's not that bad. You know, that's the other way to look at it. I mean, you can analyze it all you want, but it's still interesting.
Right.
You know?
But if it was really that oversimplified, everybody would be doing it. And the point is, everybody isn't in excess is doing it, has been doing it, and you're at the top of your game. And I think it's no. I mean, I think it's worth exploring.
Yeah, I know. It's
that's
lucky.
True. But it is a game, and it's not a game. You know, not to play with words here, but I mean, you know, I've seen fun of myself saying this a lot recently, but I think it's true. And there's, you know, I'd still be doing music whether it was a job or not. I just love music, you know, and I really and to play with people who, you know. Anyone on stage, for me, you know, a lot of that is what it's even more, to me, in some ways, all about in a funny way, because I don't even like the actual physical realities of touring, but I realize now over the years, I just love being on stage. It's just a blast, you know. There's no other feeling you get from that, you know. Nothing.
just begins to fade by itself. It's a trick I learned, though it took so long. Bitter tears taste so sweet. I've seen my way for the first time in years. When the love around begins to suffer, and you can't find love in one another, push away.
Bitter Tears. We were talking about some of your favorite stuff from the past earlier. Mm. I mean, this has this mid-60s, like a New York City or a Philly soul feel to it, as opposed to like a Memphis or a Motown.
Right, yeah.
This is like a Northern American Philly soul feel. Who wrote this one?
I put the music together for it. I must admit, I'm a really big fan of this track too. I really like this track.
Yeah, really like this
and,
one.
And it just really, to me, it's very reminiscent of the song we did, What You Need. I like the feel of it. It's very much the way I think the band plays live too. Mm. That's the way it sounds.
Yeah, it's very simple, a lot of power.
Yeah. And I think we go really over quite well in Philadelphia too, but as far as I'm aware, you know, funny you should mention that.
Yeah. It's a piano that really gives it that feel. Mm. Is that you playing that?
Yeah, it's my chops. Yeah, that's from doing that.
I could hear, I could almost hear the Rascals, the Young Rascals, doing
Kurt's
that song.
Kurt's a big fan of that band, our group. Yeah, he really likes the Young Rascals.
Yeah.
If we'd have looked in that little record case of 45s, that you probably had when you were 15. Who'd be in there, and which ones got the most spins, and why?
I know I had a really sort of strange musical upbringing because, for some reason, I suppose everybody gets this, but firstly, my parents played a lot of really good music. They liked to party. They liked to have a lot of parties, and they had a fair amount of musician friends, and so there's a lot of Latin music, a lot of soul, a lot of Motown. You know, party music from the 60s, you know. And then my older sister added the element of Hendrix, Purple, Beatles, Stones, so on and so forth. And she used to be a go-go dancer, and I sort of really witnessed that whole thing. Being a kid, you know, being like, I don't know, 8, 9, 10, and seeing my sister sort of doing go-go dancing with her friends and stuff. And that was good. And then I really just became a fan. I didn't really idolize anyone, and I just enjoy music, and I still try and keep that innocence, you know. Really just try and... I've only, in the last couple of years, actually would call myself, I guess, musically literate, you know, to a point, to a degree, in a pop sense, and to say the least, you know. I've just started to collect records again. I mean, I didn't have a record collection until the last couple of years, really.
Hmm.
So now, I mean, I just do it. I listen to everything. I think the point is that you've got to get out there and really try and find music and explore it. And there's so much music out there, not just what's coming out of the West, but it's coming out of all over the world, you know. And really get out there and explore it. I didn't realize, actually, how it all connects. And I've really tried to be, you know, like a chronologer and try and find the connections, you know. Realize that where rock comes from. Realize that the influences from the influenced, you know.
You can go back, I suppose. Oh, you can go way back to you know. Adam and Eve.
Never forget seeing Professor Longhair playing in New Orleans in a street corner. You know, that guy virtually walked off the fields and started playing, you know.
When somebody says the year 1988, or you see an old calendar and it's got the year 1988, tell me about what 1988 and success of the Kick album, what did it mean to NXS?
Mm.
I know it's broad. One. Yeah, it's a big one. But it was a big success.
Can I say something here? I think the record, the actual success of that record, to a certain extent, I think took us a little bit by surprise. But the touring side of things was very hard in the early months, and then turned around to be this unbelievably euphoric state of affairs where people really wanted to see NXS. It was, oh, great, you know. And then it tailed off where we've got to stop doing this, you know, because it just was going on and on and on and on. So it went from one ridiculous extreme to the other. At the same time, and there's a point we're in between. I must admit, there's a happy medium there somewhere. Mm. And then we're a bit wiser because of that too. How to achieve that?
It's also it's really hard to put in perspective why you're doing it. You know, I think it's taken me 2 years to sit down and go, ah, that was good, yeah. And we did that. Yeah, you know, all of us, taken all of us. You know, that's why we took some time off really to get away from it, understand what happened, but. Yeah, I mean, people have had bigger successes than us, but I suppose, it's funny in a way because it came along so steadily in a way, and we went, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We're just going on to it. Oh, yeah, we're going to play there now, are we? Oh, Texas Stadium, okay. Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
Right,
yeah. That's right. And then we're staying there. Yeah, and then you go, Texas, you know, whoa. Dallas, yeah, it's a stadium, you know.
We are here.
It sounds a little naive and stupid.
It was good. I think it probably affected us, for sure. People always say, oh, it didn't affect you, you know, but I think it does. I think it affects you. And
in what way?
All kinds of ways. Ways that you don't realize, probably. You really have to... You really have to, obviously keep your feet on the ground and not let your head explode. And I think I did a pretty good job of that. But it does change in ways. So I think you have to realize that it just adjusts your life a bit, and you know things aren't going to be the same. So you have to deal with that. You know, you have to say, you know, come to terms with that, and just say, well. Yeah, things aren't going to be the same, and you don't. I found myself not taking myself very seriously to deal with it. Yeah,
so that works for you.
Yeah, yeah. I just sure. You know, you get very self-depreciating to deal with it. I think I talked to a lot of people about that. You know, in the same sort of position. And that's what they do too. And the band does it to each other. We give each other. You know, everybody gives me a hard time. You know, funny way. But you know, and. You know, we keep everybody rolling along.
Now, you'd heard the stories from many of your peers. You'd read them. They're legendary. But when it really happens to you, Andrew, when it really happens to you, when mm-hmm. it really is difficult to go down and buy half a gallon of milk or a loaf of bread, or to go out and be a face in the crowd at a pub and see a band you want to see, mm-hmm. or you want to go out and have a quiet meal mm-hmm. with somebody and be anonymous, just a citizen, and you can't. With all the stories that you've heard about the price of fame and stardom with videos and concerts, was it what they said it would be? Was it worse? Was it not as bad? What is it? What is
well,
it?
Well, two things. I mean, firstly, it all depends what you do with it when you get there. And secondly, I've been trying to figure out all day while my hands are so dirty. I mean, I've been looking at my fingernails. And I swear, I got black stuff underneath them, and my hands.
Hold them up to the mic.
And I suddenly thought, well, what? If I, you know, I'm so grubby, and I suddenly thought, hey, maybe I've just done a good day's work. You know, so maybe it's not that bad. You know?
You're back on the road, mate.
Yeah,
grubby fingernails and all.
I don't know what to say to something like that. You know, I'll get my milk for free. I don't know. You know.
88, the album Kick, first single out, goes to number one, Need You Tonight. You get a top two and a top three in the next 6 months. This is just in America alone. I mean, that's in the books. That's not my opinion. That's a fact. Mm. Okay? Kick, the album goes to number three. Who knows how many millions of copies it sold worldwide? Do either one of you know?
I don't know, 6-7 million.
Oh.
Well, the nice thing is it keeps going up. So, you know, we don't know. You know, if I tell you now, it's not true.
I don't think it can go down. I hadn't thought about that.
That's a good point. It can't go lower. They can't, like, subtract.
No,
that's a good point.
You can take them all back.
So.
It is odd. Oh, it's strange that.
No, it was very successful.
Mm. See, I can't.
Spoiled now.
Well, I can't conceive of, you know, 6 or 7 million. Anything. Six or 7 million blades of grass.
I know. Yeah, people, that many people with your record in their collection is...
That's what you're talking about. You're talking about 6 or 7 million copies of the album that you made, 6 or 7 million purchases. It's mind-boggling. So...
Scaring me.
Yeah, well, it's bringing us...
yeah, well, I'm shaking.
It's bringing us...
I keep going.
It's bringing us up to this.
Yeah.
So why... Just overall, before we get into talking about specific songs, why didn't you make Kick 2? Why didn't you make Son of Kick?
We couldn't. We tried. No. You mean why? Well, that's good. In other words, you're saying that you think it's a different album. Well, that's good.
There's no question about it.
Yeah.
One listen and you go, wait a second, wait a second. No, you did not make Kick 2.
No, well...
Why not?
Well, I can give you an answer that may satisfy perhaps your question. I don't know. Hopefully it will.
No, give me the truth.
This is the truth. What I'm going to say is that having worked with a few other people recently who form bands, especially people who've been playing for a long time outside of their own interests, when they play together, they tend to have a certain sound. They cannot seem to change because... they've pinned down their thing, and that's really what they're always going to do. And if you don't like it, it's too bad. I'm off somewhere else. And the interesting thing is when I play with these people, I realize that's the extent of what they're jamming. I mean, even when you're playing with them, they cannot be flexible, really. There are a lot of people who can be, but I realize there are some people who get really into this thing, and that's me, and don't try and change me, okay? You know, whereas one of the good things about In Excess is I must admit, one of the reasons I love playing with this band so much is you get in there and somehow someone says, hey, let's try this. And it's completely different. And you sort of think, I'm challenged. This is a challenge. You know, this is going to throw up against me. Am I going to say, you know, I can't go that way? Or am I just going to go with this and go, this is interesting? You know, and that's a good thing about that. So I think, well, you know, to boil all that down and distill it, I mean, it's not the 30s anymore, I guess, is to say that there's a situation where the group can adapt and improvise and, you know, keep changing with the times, I hope.
Yeah. Huh? Funnily enough, our problem is that we, if it is a problem, is that we can really play anything in a lot of ways. And we've always been striving for years and years to try and almost formularize ourselves to get some grasp on what we can do. And luckily haven't succeeded, but on the way, you know.
You say
haven't succeeded in just getting a formula to work off. But on the way, we've explored. You know, I find in trying to get from A to B, you end up at C, and
that's when the fun starts.
You find stuff,
right?
On the way, you know, and that's really where it's at, I guess. You know, and I think we've done that with this album.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, also there's a lot of over the years, there's a lot of things developed in the group that just happened. You know, I mean, Kirk, he never, when we started playing, he didn't even know what a saxophone looked like. And now he plays saxophone in the group. So he learned that in the time we've been playing. These things just developed in the same way. I mean, I was playing guitar before I was playing, really, keyboards in this group with another band. And then I played a little bit of keyboards. Then I ended up playing keyboards. And so then I started developing my guitar again. And then it's like, so, and now I'm going to other areas too. I mean, you know, I would like to learn more about singing. I like to learn. I'm very thirsty for knowledge in all areas of music now, and I get the feeling that everyone in the band's like that, and that really is good. That's a good positive thing, you know, to just be thirsty for creativity.
Yes, it's dark sometimes. The people are shoving, pushing you into the ground, and you cry in daylight, the sun in your eyes, even though you know you're not alone. And it's all been felt before. You stare through your window, wonder if there's gonna be more. It brings you down.
Extreme, excellent, exclusive, extraordinary, exciting, ecstatic, X-rated, explosive, excessive, in excess, X.
When you sell 6 or 7 million anything, it can be 6 or 7 million bagels or frisbees, or in this case, kick albums. There is a lot of people who make a living off of your art. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people who are behind the scenes that are necessary to keep an enterprise like this rolling.
Yeah, that's the odd thing that happens. Yeah.
Well, now there's got to be some pressure from these people to have you do Kick 2.
No, there isn't. Honestly. I know. There just isn't. I maybe you can correct me there, Andrew, but I really don't think there is. I never had a phone call from anybody, or I've never had a conversation with anyone that has intimated that on any level.
You're very fortunate. You're definitely the exception to the record company rule.
We tried to set ourselves up with that.
How do you do that?
You've got to maintain your sense of where you're going and what you're doing, and you know, really, that's what it's all about. But I should point out that if 6 million people want to use our records for frisbees, that's their right. They paid for it. They can throw it around if they want. You know?
I think our real responsibility is to ourselves, and then to the people that like us. I mean, you don't just like. I mean, hopefully people just don't like you for one album, and if they like you, if they like an album a lot, then they're going to be interested to see where else you can take yourselves. And I think people would be disappointed if you repeated yourself.
Yeah.
Why repeat yourself? You might as well just keep the kick, and you know.
Now, I wasn't referring to your fans.
Mm.
I was.
I know you're referring to the business. I'll tell you where the pressure comes. The pressure comes, if there is any, is to each other. You know, I mean, if somebody's not coming up with the goods that we want them to come up with, that's a pressure to them. But that's on a basic band level, you know. It's not all Walt Disney. There's a lot of hard work and a lot of, you know, tears or whatever that go into it. There's a lot of fun as well. But on the other level, it's touring actually that's interesting. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of people whose lives are involved with us, and it's strange. But you don't think about it really, but. When you're touring out there, but towards the end of a tour you do, and you realize there's 60 people and they've got families, a lot of them, and you know, and it all adds up to hundreds of people, and if you can count the record business, it's thousands, tens of thousands. And
I was thinking of the
including
record
yourself.
Business. I was thinking the record business first and foremost, actually.
Yeah, whatever, you know, it goes all the way through.
Yeah,
it's symbiotic though, you know.
But we, you know, we've actually, with our crew people that we have on our crews, I mean, we you know...
Don't really take care of people.
You know, we try to. I mean, we genuinely try to. I mean, we hope to maintain...
I believe that we have to keep taking care of them, I suppose.
Well, it's not even... just getting their respect is important to us. And, and we, some of us, you know, being, you know, having families and kids ourselves or whatever, understand that... To other people, their lives aren't to be taken lightly either.
No.
And we try to maintain a good relationship with the guys that work with us, or girls, or whatever.
What about the album title? What significance, if any, is there to X?
Well, I guess we let the significance leave that to the person who's buying it or looking at it. It was a good title because it's in our name already, and we didn't want something a big wordy title. We wanted something that related to us but was open, and so it can mean lots of stuff.
Basically, you know, that's right.
It's also a little bit cheeky considering all the censorship that's going on at the moment, which is good.
It could also stand for 10 years of recording history as well, and
all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
You mentioned something that obviously you've been following in the press, particularly here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You said X and censorship. Mm-hmm. How, if we were a fly on the wall in the rehearsal room or in the recording studio, what seems to be the prevailing opinion of the members of NXS regarding this subject?
I don't know. I mean, it's twofold. To me, I think personally. On one side, I'm surprised rock and roll's got away with it for as long as it has, because most other things are censored, you know. But on the other side, if people start trying to tell me what to write, then I guess I'll just have to put up with being censored, you know. If they're going to censor me, I'm certainly not going to change anything. And I really think it's semantics, you know. We call our album X, you know. What does it mean? What does it mean? It's not, you know, you can't stop music getting to people. Two Live Crew's album is, have sold probably two or three times as many as they would have.
You know, after
they hadn't been left alone.
Right, this controversy of trying to keep it down, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know. You can't. People should have a little more sense of irony and humor about all of this, especially heavy metal, which is the funniest stuff on earth. You know, I mean, it can't take it too seriously. Look at the real problems. Don't stop. It always happens when people when things start going wrong. Someone has to get blamed, and it's pretty easy to start blaming rock and roll for stuff. But really, it's a reflection on what's going wrong in society. You know,
it's
look at education. For God's sake, why are kids listening to records and not reading books? You know, why aren't they finding values for themselves? Why do they blow their heads off with shotguns? I don't know. You certainly can't blame it on a piece of music. You know, there's a lot bigger problems they should be spending a lot more money and energy on. You know, like giving somebody a good education to start with. It's one of the biggest problems I can see facing youth at the moment. They can't. They don't know how to read or write. You know, let alone be influenced by some ridiculous concept of backwards messages about Satan.
Reasons were not always there.